coming up next. Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training, with marketing strategist and author Robin Block. This former New Yorker brings on the tough love to help you separate the gems from the junk and get the job done. Listen and learn. It's real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. Now, here's Robin.
It's been cold and wet this week, but that hasn't put a stop to business building here in the Pacific Northwest. Despite stories about the Stop Online Piracy Act, or SOPA, the mega upload shutdown, and the demise of Kodak making for sobering business headlines, there have been some pretty big investments being made right here at home. We'll hear more about those later. We'll also be talking about the heat being generated in mobile marketing. My guests today are from Atomic Mobile, and they'll be sharing their insights about how to take advantage of it for your business. But first, have you ever wondered how they get that voice into your GPS?
Okay, welcome. Is there anything I can get you before we start? Glass of water?
You may dispense with the pleasantries.
Okay, great. Tom, Darth Vader, take one.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Okay, I'm gonna stop you. The line is at the end of the road, turn right.
That is what I said.
Terrific, so let's just try it again. Tom, voice, Darth Vader, take two.
At the end of the road, turn round. At the end of the road, turn round.
Let's just go forward. Okay, we're at page 5.
You have reached your destination.
Is there any way you could breathe a little quieter?
What do you mean quieter? This is how I breathe. Please take the third exit on the roundabound.
It's roundabout.
Correct. Roundabound.
You're saying roundabound. It's roundabout. Is there any way you can make it sound a little less depressing?
Exit right ahead.
Don't force it. Just make it sound natural.
You should have seen his face when I told him I was his father. I told my son, who did not know that I was his father, that I was his father.
Yeah, and there's a twin sister involved.
Ah. Here it is.
Whoa.
Roundabound. Round-a-bound.
You know what? Let's move forward. That's fine.
Silence! Roundabound.
It's about being around.
Don't underestimate the power of the dark side.
And never underestimate the power of a good video clip. Stay with us for more about the mobile industry here on Minding Your Business. Minding Your Business is about giving you the tools and information you need to start, run, and grow your small business. Are you starting one? Do you own a business? Tell us about it or ask questions we'll answer on the air by calling 866-712-1300 or send us a tweet at MYBmedia. According to the 2012 Mobile Marketer Outlook, many brands and retailers finally took mobile marketing more seriously in 2011. Better smartphones, faster network transmission, and an explosion of applications have shifted much of what we used to do exclusively on our computers to mobile devices. And that's driving marketers to increasingly sell products, advertise, and engage in the mobile space. To give you an idea of what's happening, here's Google's take on the impact mobile is having on consumers. It's their way of explaining to average business Joes what mobile advertising could mean for their businesses, and by the way, help Google grow their mobile search and advertising revenue.
The rise of smartphones is creating smarter consumers, creating more opportunity for smarter marketing. Smartphones are always on, always with us, and always connected. In 1 week, we've browsed the internet, used a search engine, watched a video, and connected with our friends, all on our smartphones. But that's info you might already know. Here's some you might not. We're using smartphones almost everywhere, even while consuming other media. Smartphones have become such an important part of our lives that many of us would give up high heels, cable TV, even chocolate, just to keep using them. They're becoming important to our shopping habits too. Smartphones have become the ultimate shopping companion, transforming us into more savvy consumers. 79% use a smartphone to help with shopping. In fact, 70% of us actually use our smartphone while in the store. We use it to find retailers, compare prices, get coupons, read reviews, and check to see if something's in stock. Which leads us to buy. Nearly 3/4 of shoppers made a purchase as a direct result of the info we got from our smartphones, either in-store, online, or on our phone. Our new mobile shopping habits are adding up to big spending across the board. And where do we do most of our shopping? Usually in our own backyards. In fact, finding local information is one of the most popular smartphone activities. We're using our phones to find everything from the nearest pizza place to movie showtimes to finding the nearest store that carries the item we're looking for. And 88% of us use that local information and take action within a day, whether to call or visit a local business. Over the past year, mobile search queries have skyrocketed to new heights as we search for everything from product reviews to travel info to random trivia that can help us settle bets with our friends. And while word of mouth or seeing a product in store may lead people to search on smartphones, 71% of us search because we saw an ad, both on traditional media and on our phones, and we're acting on it. 9 out of 10 mobile users have taken action all thanks to a smartphone search. The simple fact is, mobile ads work. Recall seeing a mobile ad? You're not alone. 82% of us do. Yet 79% of top advertisers don't have a mobile-optimized website. It's important to build a good mobile user experience because if we see a mobile ad, we tend to click on the ad, visit the advertiser's site, make a purchase, or call the business. Today, we use smartphones to stay connected, to keep us entertained, to search for information on the go, and to make us smarter shoppers.
The data presented in that clip came from an Ipsos study commissioned by Google at the end of 2010 called The Mobile Movement: Understanding Smartphone Consumers. Marketers are tapping into this market by building mobile-friendly websites, developing apps, and generally engaging consumers in both text-based and rich media mobile advertising. According to Berg Insight, the total value of the global mobile marketing and advertising market will grow from about $3 billion in 2010 to roughly $22 billion in 2016. 51% of consumers say they're okay with advertising on their devices if it means they can access content for free, according to Nielsen stated the Media Consumer Usage Report. That's not unlike other media, such as radio and TV. Older studies have produced similar findings. Other key technologies will finally take hold in the U.S., such as mobile payments, with key players like Google Wallet and PayPal getting involved. Despite the increase in smartphone usage, text messaging, or SMS, will continue to be the number one channel, probably because most mobile devices come with texting capability. Indeed, according to Mobile Marketer, the big challenge is the wide variety of devices that people use, from phones with only text messaging to fully capable smartphones, which makes it difficult to build one marketing solution for all. We'll also be hearing a lot more about social, local, mobile, otherwise known as SOLOMO, that is the combination of social media, location-based advertising, and mobile marketing. And Google won't be far behind with search tools and the dollars that follow to help users navigate the growing number of mobile-optimized websites. After the break, we'll be speaking with today's guests from Atomic Mobile, John Peterson and Kelly McIver, about how you can begin to integrate mobile marketing into your strategy. You're listening to Minding Your Business on 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If you have questions about your mobile marketing strategy, send us a tweet at MYB Media. We'll answer your questions on the air. Stay tuned. But first, here in investment news, Cadence Biomedical, which works on products to help disabled people walk, has received just over $1.5 million in a new round of investment and government grants. The firm plans to use the cash to bring the first commercial versions of its walk assist device to the orthotics market this spring. Health Tech Capital is leading the syndicate of medical device angel investors who are putting $750,000 in equity and convertible debt towards the deal. Bellevue-based FinSphere recently added $7.3 million in fundraising, including the sale and exercise of some options from Vodafone Ventures, an arm of the UK-based mobile operator. Founded in 2007, the company offers software and data analysis of consumer mobile phones for identity verification. One application of the service is helping banks and other financial providers track fraud and identity theft. FinSphere also offers a consumer version called Pinpoint. On the social media front, Twitter just acquired Vancouver, BC's Sumify, a startup that counts Real Networks founder Rob Glazer as one of its investors. Sumify analyzes a user's media feeds to digest top stories and to determine which ones are being passed around and talked about. The company, whose seed round happened only last spring, was started by a pair of former interns for Google and Microsoft and is a product of now-defunct Vancouver incubator Boot Up Labs. Sumify will be shutting down its Vancouver office and relocating to San Francisco. Thanks to Exonomy for a background on these stories. And in other selling news, more businesses exchanged hands last year, according to the Wall Street Journal. Sales of businesses with roughly $360,000 in annual revenue rose 3.3% in 2011, according to BizBuySell, a San Francisco-based online marketplace for small business acquisitions. The small increase indicates it's still a buyer's market. Slight improvements in small business lending is helping, says Curtis Croker, a BizBuySell general manager, but many sellers are pushing the deals through by providing as much as 50 to 70% of the financing, since banks have been holding back. In healthy economies, seller financing is more like 20 to 30%. Croker believes the business for sale market is poised to grow even further this year as the economy recovers. You're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
Our guests today are John Peterson, Chief Strategist, and Kelly McGiver, known as the Professor, from Atomic Mobile. John has worked with companies like Sony Entertainment and Comcast, as well as local municipalities and public agencies. He's responsible for client strategy and project management at Atomic. Kelly has been in the mobile space for more than 20 years. He's worked with some big brands like AT&T Wireless, Buy.com, Virgin America, Warner Music, Gameloft, and Disney. He's also an adjunct professor at the University of Washington, where he teaches mobile media and integration in the Masters of Communications in Digital Media program. We're happy to have John Peterson and Kelly McGiver of Atomic Mobile here today. Welcome to Minding Your Business.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robin.
So at the top of the show, we heard a clip from Google that talked about how consumers are using smartphones today. Who are these people, and what do you believe they're really doing with their phones?
Well, they're all of us, really. I mean, right now, half of all people carrying cell phones are carrying smartphones, and they're doing what they want to do when they're out and about, and that's look up information, you know, obviously to communicate with their via text messaging and stuff like that, but they're trying to make their lives simpler by using their device and the access it gives you to get their life done.
Half have smartphones, and what are the other half doing?
The other half are largely text messaging. I mean, a lot of the what we call dumb phones are not, they're not smartphones.
Okay.
I'm looking at one right now. A lot of those phones can browse websites, but it's a really terrible, terrible experience.
And why is that?
The website, first of all, the website wasn't designed to be viewed on a 2-inch by 2-inch screen, and the phone isn't capable of reading normal websites. So it's written in a language that the phone just can't handle. So largely, what these feature phone users are doing is text messaging between themselves, and also getting information from some brands. I mean, you can, as a company, you can set up a program where people can receive text messages from you. If you have, say, you're having a sale tomorrow between 12 and 1, you send them a text message. You can send that text message to any phone, feature phone, smartphone. Almost 95% of all phones can receive text.
So it's ubiquitous, kind of like email.
SMS certainly is.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And everybody's familiar with how to do it.
It's very different than email, though, in the sense that email is something that you kind of get periodically, whether you want it or not, and you take your time to look at it, and it's usually a lot more information. Where SMS is something that you do usually on a very personal level. It's one to one, and it's something that you look at right away. You don't take 90 minutes to respond to a text message. You take 90 seconds to respond to a text message. So it's a much more personal means of communication, and brands have to be careful with that because they can end up violating the user in a lot of ways when they're getting a text message and suddenly they realize, oh, this is just an ad, again, from the same advertiser, and they're expecting to have some sort of interaction with that brand because SMS is usually used for one-to-one interaction. So it's very different than email.
So first, my first question is, do people opt in for these kinds of messages from these brands?
They do.
Okay. And usually that's done after the first text message is sent?
It's done in a variety of different ways. Kelly could give a lot more information on the different ways of opting in.
Yeah, I mean, there's first of all, the ability to send messages to your customers, if you're a brand, is managed and monitored by an organization called the Mobile Marketing Association. And there's a whole book of rules that you need to follow in order to get that done. And so there's services that have been built to help you follow those rules. But primarily, you can either, A, go to a website that will ask you for your mobile number, and the website will then send you a text message. You reply to that text message with the word, like, okay, basically giving
you... So it's like a verification.
It is, yeah. And then the other more popular one is just a simple call to action, like, text this keyword to this number to sign up for our stuff. And you'll see that sort of call to action printed on billboards. And
that's considered an opt-in?
That's considered the call to action. Once you actually send that keyword via text message, then you have officially opted in.
Ah, that's interesting. So in terms of content, we were talking about the difference between text content and email content. Mm-hmm. Tell me the limitations that occur with a text messaging.
Well, one is size.
Okay, so...
I mean, email, you can have a really lengthy email and paragraphs. Text is limited to 160 characters, so... That is one key factor. The other thing is just the user expectation of a text message versus an email. The user is expecting to have a message that's obviously short, but something that they can interact with, because that's how they do it with people. You know, hey, what are you doing tonight for dinner? And you expect a response, and it's that type of back and forth. So when they get a text message from a brand, even when they've opted in to receive text messages from that brand, because it's on the SMS channel, their expectation is still one of interaction. They're expecting to get a message that they can do something with.
So a link, primarily.
Well, the problem with a link is you immediately eliminate half of the people who are receiving that text message, because they could very well be on a feature phone or a dumb phone, like Kelly calls them. And they can't click on the link. So enabling them to respond to that text message or do something to take action, that's their expectation.
So how would they respond if they have a dumb phone and they can't click on the link? Are they given a phone number, a place to maybe visit a website that they have to go then to their laptops, kind of thing?
I mean, that's where you really need to dig into what is the user doing at that moment when they receive that text message. Are they on a bus? Are they walking down the street? Are they comfortable? Are they sitting at home in front of the television? You think about if somebody's watching TV, the number one device that's with them while they're watching TV is their mobile phone. So putting a text call to action on a TV ad would be a brilliant thing to do, because they can, you know, pick up their phone, they can text in that keyword, they can interact, and they're comfortable.
I think American Idol had that one pretty nailed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But recognizing what the user's expectations are, what they're doing, is really key in what the call to action is, so that you're not asking them to do something that they maybe can't do at that moment or don't want to do at that moment. But the simplest thing would be to just say, hey, you know, if you're interested in this or that, text something back. You know?
So give me an example, if you can.
Well, I was just going to add to what John was saying and what you had asked about the how does somebody respond if they've just got a feature phone. Mm-hmm. Certainly they can respond via text message. Of course, your system has to be able to do something with that. But you could put a phone number in the message, and somebody could just call the phone number.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my gosh, I know.
So we're merging... We're merging technology and people actually... Well, it's still the same technology. I mean, you can do voice on a phone. Hello. I mean,
yeah.
It's so easy to forget about that part.
Well, and if you're between the ages of, 12 and 20, you don't use the voice part of your phone.
We are making a broad assumption here, but, I mean, that's probably generally true. We were just talking before we actually got on the air today why kids, between that age may not want to use voice. And my theory is that they really don't want to talk to each other. There's too much social baggage that goes with that. And I'm wondering if any of our listeners feel the same way. And as a matter of fact, if you would call us and tell us your feelings about how people use text messaging, give us a call at 866-712-1300, or you could tweet us at MYB Media. We're speaking with John Peterson and Kelly McIver of Atomic Mobile. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business. So let's talk about that context thing. We actually got a tweet from somebody, hooray, Fennec Listens on Twitter, and they said, how relevant is mobile marketing where location is not a factor? I mean, we know that knowing, you were mentioning, John, that knowing where somebody is at any one moment. I mean, I can think of an example. You're it's happy hour, right? Mm-hmm. And you come out of your office and you're like, oh, where should I go for happy hour? Who has the best deal right now? And if you were a bar, you could be texting messages just at that moment, like around 4:35, and make it go to that person if you had other information about them. And then they would get the right message at the right time, at the right moment, in the right mood. So speak to that, if you would.
Well, the question is, when is it effective when location is not an
issue? Oh, that's true. Okay, let's start with that.
I would say it's effective anytime you have a brand who has a product where location is not an issue. Where you're selling a product that can be used anywhere or desired anywhere, mobile marketing becomes a very effective means of advertising and interacting with customers.
A good example that I was thinking of is a bank. If your bank can send you a text message when a certain dollar value of a transaction goes on, you don't have to be anywhere particularly. You want to get that no matter where you are, so that you can then respond, either call the bank and say, what was that? Or, you know, maybe it's your credit card, and what did my daughter just buy? So location is powerful when it comes to local search and looking for local businesses and small businesses, but it can be equally powerful for nationwide services like banking.
Well, we're going to be talking more about how mobile applies to local, and hopefully we'll get some more tweets about how people feel about tweeting and messaging and so forth. Our show today is all about mobile marketing here on Minding Your Business on Money Radio, 1300 KKOL. I'm Robin Block. If you have any ideas or questions for our guests, John Peterson and Kelly McIver of Atomic Mobile, tweet MYB Media.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. And now we return to Minding Your Business with Robin Block on Money Radio 1300 KKOL. Once again, here's Robin.
We're here with the strategist and the professor of Atomic Mobile, talking about mobile marketing here on Minding Your Business. So before the break, we were talking about the importance of location and putting messages in context with the information that they're getting. So what do we really need to know about consumers in order to really target the messages more appropriately?
That's a great question. And that's one of the biggest fails that we see in mobile marketing is the failure to get information about the people receiving your messages so that you can make the messages more relevant. And it doesn't have to be really complicated. You can simply ask them, if for location, for an example, you can ask them what their zip code is so that you're not sending them information on something that's miles away.
Is that as granular as you can get, the zip code?
Well, if you want to make it easy, so if you're going to ask somebody for where they're at without actually doing some sort of technological feat.
So, I mean, for example, a lot of local marketing is very dependent on neighborhood. I mean, if we think about Seattle, it's all about what neighborhood are you in. That's the first thing people will say, let's go out somewhere. What neighborhood do you want to pick? What's easier? What do we want to do? What's central? All those kinds of things. So, but it's hard to ask. You could ask a consumer what neighborhood. But at the back end, you'd have to figure out how to marry that to the other data.
Exactly.
You have.
Yeah. Okay. Exactly, and that's why you often use zip code. But nowadays, with smartphones, either an application or a website that they're on will actually just detect your location.
And the magic of GPS.
Yes.
Yes.
and the magic, and it can be a challenge too, because some people feel it's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
To be tracked, like, oh wait a minute, you know I'm sitting in this office in this building right now.
I think a lot of people got scared about Foursquare, for example, that social application that will, you check in places, and then it says, if you do it enough, you're the mayor of, like, the coffee shop or something. I mean, I'm not sure who cares about that, but I know some people do.
That's still a question that's out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah, and there are other apps, like on LinkedIn, I think it's called Tripwire or something like that, and you can say, hey, I'm going to be traveling to XYZ on such and such a date exactly at this time, so come and rob my house, you know? It's like, so I understand how the location-based aspect of it can be a little bit scary.
And then there's preferences. So if you're a restaurant chain and you want to deliver, and we'll go back to SMS, you want to deliver SMS messages to your customers, and you would be well served to ask your customers a couple of simple questions. What sorts of food are you interested in? Are you interested in happy hour? Are you interested in entrees? Are you interested in Mexican food, pizza? So that when you finally get a message out to the device, it's actually tailored to that person.
So I'm kind of wondering, are there companies that are starting to marry their data, like Yelp has all that data about neighborhoods and types of foods and that kind of thing, with the mobile marketing piece? Have you heard about anything about that?
I think a lot of companies are recognizing that they need to. I think the challenge is that a lot of times that information is stored in such different locations.
Different servers,
yeah,
all over
and
the world.
So, you know, trying to bring that together, you know, it's, you know, oh, that information is over in this group and they won't give it up type of a scenario.
Oh, it's proprietary. Like people are holding on to their own data.
Even within one organization where, you know, that's the email marketing group that has all the demographic information on those particular people.
Oh, they're siloed.
And because they're so siloed, they have a hard time sharing that information to actually make those messages more valuable.
And there is the privacy piece. Some people opt in, but they're told that their information won't be shared.
Yeah, I think, you know, talking about SMS, as far as location and how to make it valuable, like think of a restaurant or a coffee shop, and we were talking about how to make mobile marketing via SMS conversational. And, you know, say if someone texts in, you know, join, I want to be part of your coffee club or whatever. You receive that text message and you just ask them a quick question back that says, what's your favorite drink? And so they go, oh, I can text back to, you know, this keyword or this, you know, short code or whatever. And so they say, you know, it's a latte. Well, you store that information with that mobile number. You don't need to know who that person is. But now when you send out a special next week that says, hey, 10% off your latte, but the user, you know, the next user down the road might have said that their favorite drink was a mocha. And so they receive a tailored message. You're going to have a much better return on that type of thing because you've catered it to your users and what their expectations are and what their interests are. And you've recognized that SMS is a channel for one-to-one communication. You've allowed them to do that.
That's something I always talk about in my marketing classes, where the more relevant the communication is to the user, the more they're going to have an emotional response to it.
Yeah.
And emotional messaging is more memorable, more useful, it gets more attention. So I think that's true in the mobile space as well. So we're talking about some pretty fancy footwork here in terms of saving data and targeting and whatever. What kind of tools can a small business tap into to kind of execute on these programs?
There are plenty of options. And there's a wide range. So there's shops that will build programs for you. You know, you go to an agency like ours.
That's spendy, though, isn't it?
That can get expensive.
Yeah.
But you're pretty much assured to get what you want and what you need.
Yeah, and that's true with custom programming at any time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So if we were to build something like this for somebody just to send out text messaging, but with a back-end database to store, like, preferences, what's the range in what that might cost? Any ideas?
It's going to be totally variable because it's going to depend on how much information you need to store, what you need to do with that information, how that information is going to be used for future marketing efforts.
All right, so startup, like minimum in, what are we talking about?
On a custom program, you're probably in, you know, the $4,000 to $5,000.
All right, so that wouldn't be bad for a more moderate, like say Tutabella, for example, that has several shops and, you know, the pizza chain, the local pizza chain, it might be useful for them. Because they're going to use that frequently.
There are also options, self-service options. There are plenty of companies online where you just sign up. They have a short code that's already provisioned through the Mobile Marketing Association. You rent a keyword that works on that system. So then you can make your call to action. Say, text my keyword to this short code and sign up to be on my list.
Can you name any off the top of your head that you have used or thought about?
Well, there's one that we work with a little bit called Tatango.
Okay.
They're here in the States.
And T-A-Tango?
Tatango.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll figure that out. I'll look it up and we'll post it on the website.
But the key is your self-service. And so you sign up for it, you you log into this tool and you get things set up, but then you have to do your own. You have to figure out how to do the call to action. You have to figure out how to make the messages relevant. You're on your own.
Well, there's the whole strategy piece
exactly, that
wraps around that. It's not just about the tools. So we'll get back to that in a second. We're here speaking with John Peterson and Kelly McIver of Atomic Mobile. I'm Robin Block, and you're listening to Minding Your Business here on KKOL 1300. Have you been considering how mobile might impact your business? Tell us by calling 866-712-1300 or send us a tweet at MYB Media. So getting back to that, what is mobile strategy all about? Like, how is mobile strategy different than other strategic initiatives in marketing?
I would say probably nothing makes it different.
Thank you for that. Yay! You know, it's like everybody thinks social media is like, oh my God, it's so different than everything else we've ever done.
I mean, you're going to approach mobile strategy in the same way you would approach strategy for anything.
Okay, so what do you start with?
Figuring out, who's your market? What are you trying to communicate? What are your goals? What are your objectives? Like, what?
Kelly is laughing because it's like, to every marketer on the planet, understanding who your customer is like job one. But to people who don't get marketing, they seem to skip over that piece. I'm not sure why that happens. But we all understand that, right? Back me up on this.
Oh, yes.
Right? Okay.
I think the thing that I would add to it is, more than understanding just who your market is, understand where your market is and what their expectations are.
So the location piece is the additional.
Yes. A perfect example. Say you're thinking of doing a QR campaign.
Okay. Explain QR for our listeners.
Quick response codes. They're the 2D barcodes that you see that are like a bunch of black and white squares. And
those aren't new, by the way.
They're not.
They were developed in Japan or somewhere like about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Yes.
And really, they're a means of entering data into your smartphone easily.
So you scan, you take your smartphone.
You scan it.
You can't do it with a text phone.
No, not unless
it's a dumb phone.
A dumb
cannot
phone.
Scan
no.
QR codes. Okay, just to get that straight.
But rather than having to, type in a URL or start a text message or, get somebody's contact information onto your device, you can store all that information in a QR code and then just scan it.
So, for example, like I could be on a bus. Mm-hmm. And I could see a little sign in the bus, and I can hold up my phone, even though I'll probably look really stupid.
Exactly.
And that might take me to a website, for example, or it might deliver additional information to my phone.
Mm-hmm. There could be information contained in that QR code.
Will read right on my phone immediately?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
But thinking about what is the user doing? The bus example, say you put this QR code campaign on the ceiling of the bus. It's going to be a very awkward experience for the customer to be holding their...
Especially while you're moving.
Yeah. The bus is bouncing around and they're like trying to not look like an idiot, but they're, holding their phone up in the air and they can't scan it because it's moving all over the place. So it seemed like a great idea, except it becomes a bad idea as soon as you start to consider what the user is doing. And so I think that's a huge part of a mobile strategy is recognizing what your users are doing when you're engaging with them.
So there's that three-dimensional thing. You've got all the data about your customers, right? Like who they are and where did they, their zip code and things like that. But then there's that, what I call like the real live, you have to imagine in your mind, where is this person going to be? I mean, when we used to do apps, we'd think, okay, this business person is in an airport. They're running down one of those people mover things because they're late for their plane. Are we going to text them right now? Obviously you have to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In order to have a really good mobile strategy, there are some things you have to put in place, just like any strategy. For example, you need a website, right? Because if people know about you, the first thing they're going to do is check you out on the web. And now it's by phone.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we need to know about having a website for mobile?
It's becoming less and less of a question of, who's your market? And does your market demand you having a mobile-optimized site? It's becoming more of a fact that you need to have a mobile-optimized site because of the fact that the market is growing so much for mobile users.
So everything we've known about web and how that evolved, it's almost parallel to mobile developing now.
Mm-hmm.
Even 5 years ago, I would say to people, well, you really should have a website, but I'm not absolutely saying it. But now we say you have to have a website to be legitimate as a business. And now we're getting to the point where you need a mobilized website, a mobile-friendly website.
Yeah.
Consumers are expecting it. They're wondering what they're thinking about your business.
Well, those with
business.
Smartphones.
Half
of the population are expecting it.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Well, I think the feature phone users would like to. And once they get their smartphone, and they will.
Yeah, they're getting cheaper, yeah. So I think they'll get picked up.
They'll realize what they can do with it, and then all businesses are gonna need to have a mobile site.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So you might as well get on the bandwagon now. So what's the easiest way to do that?
Think simply. What is the user wanting on their mobile
device?
While they're mobile. Okay. They're probably, you know, for a lot of establishments, they want to know where you're located, or they want to know how to contact you, or they want to know a little bit about you. That you don't need to put your whole full-blown website on the mobile device for a lot of companies.
Aren't there tools that, like, I don't know, WordPress or something that say, hey, we're automatically mobile in the template that's been created? Is that really true?
There are, yeah, like for WordPress, there's a lot of mobile templates that you can install.
Okay, well, we'll come back and talk more about that. You're listening to Minding Your Business on Money Radio, 1300 KKOL. We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more Minding Your Business with Robin Block after this on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.
We're continuing our conversation with John Peterson and Kelly McIver of Atomic Mobile, talking about mobile marketing here on Minding Your Business. So we were talking about mobilizing your website. So are there any tools out there that make that pretty easy to do that we could share with our listeners?
Like I was mentioning before the break, WordPress has themes. A lot of even free themes. So if your site is using WordPress, you could look into that.
Themeforest.net is a place to get themes, by the way.
Okay.
Just one example.
Yeah, so I would look at that first. If you're using a content management system like WordPress or whatever, look there first. See if there's themes that have already been created that might work for you.
So that's if you're building a website from scratch.
Or if you already have a website.
Would you set up a parallel website then?
That kind of gets into a whole other topic.
Yeah, we won't go there, but sometimes you need one and sometimes you don't.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll save that for another day or a class. You'll have to go to their classes and learn about that stuff. You also mentioned, Kelly, you wanted to talk about...
There are things you can do even before you start building things like websites and applications. As a small business, right now Atomic is talking with a company called yellowpages.com, and it occurred to me that it's an easy way for a business to be in the mobile space simply by making sure your data is updated in all these mobile applications. For example, you want someone who's using the Yellow Pages mobile app to find your business. So make sure your business is listed there. Make sure you're
listed. So where do you go? You go to yellowpages.com
You look up your own listing, mm-hmm. and if it's not accurate, you can update it.
Oh, okay.
And you can make sure it's...
You should do that anyway, whether you're mobile or not, right?
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
But then there's Yelp and, you know, I think there's... Google Maps, just making sure your business has updated information in all these places where people who are mobile are going to look for you.
It's especially important, especially in anything involving mapping or Yellow Pages on the fly. You know, how many of us, I don't know, back in the day would call the 411 and say, where am I? You know, like you just need an address. You wanted to call like a restaurant because you're late. But now people do that with their smartphones. So make sure that's up to date. That's the low-hanging fruit.
It is, and it's easy.
Is there any other low-hanging fruit you could think of off the top of your heads?
For mobile?
Well, I have one idea. I'll just throw this one out there.
Okay.
I mean, we talk about using some of these fancy tools like Tatango.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be that fancy. Who knows? But we'll have to check that one out. But Twitter is mobile by its very nature. So if you can start getting people to sign up, your customers, your clients, whatever, to sign up for Twitter... Ask them to make sure they turn mobile on because you'll be sending out alerts that will be relevant to them while they're out and about, if you're that kind of business, if that is appropriate for you.
Yeah.
And so nice low-hanging fruit there.
It is. Easy way to get into it.
Yeah.
The risks that you run with some of those types of programs is that you're tweeting things that were made to be consumed by somebody sitting at their desk.
Perhaps.
Or you're giving them a link to something.
They may have Twitter mobile, though.
Yes. My point is the content.
Yeah.
Is making sure that the content you put out there.
Oh, absolutely.
Don't send them a link to a desktop site when they could very well be on their mobile device.
Yeah, so be aware that when you are using Twitter for mobile, I wonder, you could even set up a separate Twitter mobile account for your business. There's an interesting idea. And then you always make sure that your messages are context relevant in the mobile space.
Yes.
If you're using that. Or just go use the other tools that we were talking about. So that's kind of up to you. Which types of businesses are most at risk of losing customers if they don't have a mobile strategy?
Wow, that's a good one.
I would say...
Go ahead, John.
Oh. I would say...
No, you.
Any business that has a tight geographical market that has close competitors. So...
Fitness.
I was going to say sports clubs. Restaurants would be a huge one.
Hair salons, perhaps.
I mean, yeah, it's any business like that. Where they're going to have a lot of competition that's in close proximity with each other.
And the thing is, these days, because mobile marketing is still relatively new for a lot of people, it does give you a leg up automatically just by jumping in earlier than everyone else. I think that would be a wise strategy just in and of itself. It's not going to last for long, that window of opportunity. But, you know, if you get on the bandwagon now, you'll be ahead of the game.
You bet. Oh. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And a lot of times the mobile programs are more effective. As an example, we were talking about SMS earlier, and there's been a lot of studies on the effectiveness of mobile coupons. And so if you're a local business and you can get someone to sign up on your list and you send them a coupon that they can bring in, show it to you on their phone, redemption rates for those are, you know, in double digits often.
Well, they have like Groupon Now, you know, which is also immediate. Mm-hmm. So if you had that while you're out and about, for lunch or whatever. Now, we always have to be careful about recommending couponing, of course. I have information about the pros and cons and tips about using couponing in my blog on blockbeta.com because you can really lose your shirt doing couponing. So I just want to put that warning out there. But if you find that couponing is effective for your business, a mobile delivery system could be one of the most effective ways to use it.
You could offset the cost of paper coupons just by switching everything over to mobile.
How do you...
Well, if you're doing direct mail, say you're using a Valpak or something like that.
Ooh.
Sorry.
No,
I mean,
okay.
They're fine. They work fine.
Valpak has its place, just like everything else.
It absolutely does. But you could, because mobile is more effective, you could offset the cost of other coupon delivery systems and just use mobile.
But more effective in certain contexts.
Mm-hmm.
So with our customers out there who don't have dumb phones, you know, going back to paper isn't such a bad idea. So speaking of these other tools you can use, when you're thinking about your strategy, how do you integrate mobile with other things that you're doing?
Talking about direct mail, using mobile ways of engagement with direct mail. So maybe you put a QR code or a keyword to text in on your direct mail piece, because you think about the person who's sitting at their kitchen table having their morning coffee and they're looking at their mail and they go, oh, what's this? This is interesting. The likelihood of them getting up and walking over to their computer or grabbing their laptop is very slim, but the likelihood of their smartphone sitting beside them is very high. So giving them an opportunity to engage with your brand with that direct mail piece with their mobile phone, that's, I think, a huge opportunity right there.
So are there other pieces besides direct mail? Like how would you integrate, let's say, radio and mobile marketing?
Saying things over the air, asking people to text in. For instance, even on our business cards, you can text in our name to our phone number. So if you text, you know, John, J-O-N, to our phone number, which is 206-673-2747, you'll get my contact information.
Repeat that for us, will you?
It's John, J-O-N, at 206-673-2747. And likewise, you can do that with Kelly, too. You just text in his name, and you'll get his contact information.
Not the professor, but Kelly. Right?
We should set it up so the professor works.
I think that would be good.
That's a good idea.
Ideas. We're all about ideas here. That's great. How do you measure the effectiveness of a mobile marketing campaign?
By having objectives first.
Yes.
You mean something to measure against... That's brilliant.
101, really.
Yeah, we're back to marketing strategy, knowing what you want to accomplish, how many customers, you know, make it even quantitative.
Exactly.
You know, what number are we trying to hit? It's going to make you feel a lot better when you actually hit it.
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, it's going to change based upon what you're trying to accomplish. If you're looking for app downloads or you're looking for, you know, conversions, whatever it is, that's going to change. But knowing what those goals are is essential.
We're speaking with John Peterson and Kelly McIver of Atomic Mobile.
You've been listening to Minding Your Business, sponsored by Sandler Training with Robin Block. Real business know-how for today's entrepreneurs. To contact Robin, you can email Robin with two B's at blockbeta.com. That's Robin at blockbeta.com. Join us again next Saturday afternoon at 1 for more Minding Your Business with Robin Block here on Money Radio 1300 KKOL.